Well, did you see this coming? A 9-game point streak, a point in every game in December, and the Flyers are rolling. Let's talk about it all right now.
This is the Orange and Backcheck podcast with Bill Kornfeld and Scott Weinhardt.
It is episode 165 of Orange and Backcheck. Thank you so much for joining us as always. Brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings Sportsbook. Man, this has been a hell of a month of December for Philly sports fans. The team that we thought was really good is faltering, and the team we anticipated to be really bad this entire winter and early spring is one of the best in the entire NHL, and that's the Philadelphia Flyers, right here on this podcast that was predicted by Scott Weinhardt. So the easy, obvious question is, Scott, did you anticipate them to be this good at this point?
No, I did not. I honestly thought this team would be battling for between like third and fourth in the division. I didn't see them as what's called as like second place. But I mean, and if you look at it from a step back, they really are like between second and fourth, because only 2 points separates them between them and the Hurricanes. So I mean, they're right there where I thought where they were being. But the fact that they strung together a nine game point streak, the fact that they have not lost in regulation in the month of December, the fact that this team just continues to find ways to get points and find ways to battle themselves back in games, regardless of what's happening, it's fun to watch, man. It's impressive. It's like, you know, you're starting to believe. You know, people are getting excited, which is great to see. I think some people are getting a little bit too much over the top. Like, oh man, like, you know, the rebuild, and they, you know, they could if they keep playing this, they go win a Stanley Cup. Relax, we're not even close to that yet. This team is not even close to be a Stanley Cup contender. But you know, enjoy this. This is actually really fun.
This is
to
fun.
Watch. This is really, we haven't had good hockey like this in close to a decade. I'll be honest with you, man. Like, this is the kind of team that reminds me of like some of those teams that, you know, that give you those good memories, like 07, 08, you know what I mean? 2009, 2010, the things they had to come through, you know, the 11-12 team, the 13-14 team, you know, even shades of the 19-20 team. But that's it. All those years in between, there wasn't a lot of this. And this is fun to watch. This is really fun to watch, and just enjoy it while it lasts, because you don't know how long it will.
Well, you anticipate it to last a long time. Like, this is what you're kind of seeing, the seeds of what Tortorella and company are planting, to go to the flower analogy, one said by Nick Sirianni of the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, this is the growth phase. We're putting down the seeds. We're tendering it. We're putting down the soil, all that stuff, the growth underneath, and what we're not seeing and all that stuff. So I think where fans can easily get excited is what the product on the ice is. And what that leads to is obviously speculation of how good this team really is. Like, is this a fluke? No, I don't think it's a fluke. I think this is legitimate lack of star power, because I don't think they haven't had a superstar, quote unquote, on their team since the days of Claude Giroux. And we'll get to Claude Giroux in a minute here. So Carter Hart, you can start to argue. I think he's a couple of, I don't even know how to, like, I don't want to say years, but I think he's like on the fringe of superstardom, but I don't think he's being talked about in that way. Certainly not throughout the NHL. And I don't think on a consistent, realistic basis among the Flyers fan base. So what you're seeing today in Flyers world and the Flyers on ice product is fun to watch, because it's like, this was unexpected. And there's enough players to say, I could see them flourishing in 2 to 3 years when the big names come over, or when the superstar is here, when the superstar has made a name for themselves, whether that is Carter Hart or Travis Konechny. Or I could, like, you got to start talking about the superstardom, potential superstardom of the Owen Tippetts of the world. Is Tyson Forrester there? These players, because it's so unknown, you can talk about them and being, hey, there's something here that you can say, yeah, I can see them being a household name in the NHL fandom in 3 years or 4 years, whatever that number is. And that's exciting.
Yeah, 100%. And this is the benefiting of good drafting, you know, having good talent, keeping some of that good talent. But at the same time, don't get it twisted. Excuse me. At the same time, this is still a rebuilding team. So there are going to be pieces that are going to be moved before, you know, the trade deadline this season. So, like, there are things out there as far as, like, you know, Sean Walker is still a prime trade candidate. Rasmus Ristolainen, you know, Morgan Frost, you know, Nick Seeler, Mark Stahl. Those guys are going to be trade targets 100%. And you're going to get some valuable assets for them.
I'm very curious what they do with Ristolainen out of that entire group. I think all of them, you're right, are going to be trade discussions. But Ristolainen is the most interesting one because not only is he tenured, because he's not a pending free agent or restricted free agent, he's on this team for the next 2 to 3 years. I forget what the contract is off the top of my head. Doesn't matter. It's one of those things where he's also saying, I wish I had Torts as my coach when I was 18, 19, 20 years old. And when you start to hear that on a consistent basis, I mean, we talked about, touched on Michael Delzato talking about how much he enjoyed playing for John Tortorella when he was on the New York Rangers. These things don't happen coincidentally. Like, these are legitimate things, and I am prepared to say, and I did not tell you I was going to do this, I was 100% wrong on John Tortorella. It is a classic scenario of what you talked about last week about fans versus coaches. This is, I think, and we saw this a little bit if you were paying attention to the, well, go search All Black, All White NFL, and you'll understand what, I think there is.
Oh, God, Rashard Mendenhall.
Yeah.
God,
I so think bad. There is a legitimate case where there are some certain aspects where people like myself don't have a space to talk. Like, I don't know what it's like in a locker room. I don't know what it's like in the huddle or on the ice, on the bench, that kind of thing. This is one of those scenarios where I was truthfully just talking out of my ass at the end of the day, because it was a hot take that I thought Tortorella was the wrong fit for what the Flyers were trying to do. And it happily blew up in my face. So for guys like Ristolainen that are playing really, really, really well as a Philadelphia Flyer, and you have him tenured for the next couple of seasons, where in the next couple of seasons, you're anticipating this team to only get better, poses an interesting question for the likes of Danny Briere and Keith Jones. So I'm very curious of what they're going to do, because let's not get this, like you said, twisted. There is still a plan in place that they are adhering to. Just because they are overachieving today, and they are overachieving. Here's where I think it is overachieving. None of us anticipated this. You said it yourself. That's why I led off with that question. We didn't anticipate this level of success.
Now you're putting words in my mouth, and that's not what I said. I did not anticipate him having a nine game point streak. That was my point. I did not anticipate them not having a regulation loss to this point in December. That's the overachieving I'm talking about. I fully expect this team to not only get into the playoffs, but to win a round. And I made that prediction at the beginning of the season. That's not a hot take, people. That is my prediction. And you might sit there like, okay, this guy's nuts if this is the first time you ever listen to the podcast. I'd ask you to please go back and listen to the episode starting in August. And you'll see that. Maybe even, July, August. Go back to that and start listening to where we are today.
I would say even July.
Tell me where I'm wrong.
July, August, yeah.
Please tell me where I'm wrong. Like, you know, I'm not the type of guy where I'm going to sit here and pat myself on the back, but go back and tell me where I was wrong. Because frankly, like I've been saying all along, this is a playoff team. And what the thing is that I expected this because of the record John Tortorella has had in the past with teams in his second season. The numbers are there. The talent is there. He sent the franchise re-hit the reset button last season when they hired John Tortorella. The changes of adding Keith Jones and Dan Hilferty to the mix and Danny Briere We're just icing the tips of the iceberg. The main foundation for this whole rebuild has been John Tortorella at the core. And that's because everything for the culture starts from that locker room and having the right players in the right areas. And the thing is, what I love about this team so far is that you can literally see on the ice they are playing for each other. You see guys diving late in games, taking pucks in the stomach to block shots so they don't get through the net. Like, that is, like, I think it was Ryan Poehling who took one in the stomach a couple games back, maybe against Nashville. So, and that hurts, man. That does not feel good. And he took it so the puck wouldn't get there. That's laying your body on the line, not just to win, but for your team, for your teammates. So it doesn't get through, so you have a chance to win the game. That's the mentality. And that's the mentality that Mr. Schneider had instilled when he ran the ship here. And that's what got away for the longest time when you have corporate people running something that they don't know. But I digress. But John Tortorella came back and said, that's not how you do things. It's not how you do things. And he got some people out of the room that he saw were causing problems. Guys like Kevin Hayes. Not that he's a problem guy, but he didn't fit what John Tortorella was trying to do. And we saw that clearly by a lot of the benchings. We saw Ivan Provorov the same thing. It was time for a change. It just wasn't going to work here. You see, make those moves, and look how different the team is performing. And I really got to give John Tortorella credit for one big thing. And this is maybe the one thing I was a little wrong on. When Tyson Forster, before he started scored his first goal of the season, he just he was doing all the little things right, but he just could not put the puck in the net. And he didn't bench him. And he stuck with it, saying he's doing all the things that it's going to get going. A similar player who had the same kind of luck back in 07-08 was Scott Hartnell, a guy who was just playing the game, but just could not get it to go. And then I think the next season he scored 30 goals. So, like, I give him credit for that. The whole point I'm trying to make here is that I'm not shocked where they're at right now. I think it's a 9-game point streak. I mean, the elite teams do that. That's the overachieving part about it. I mean, the key is, though, is that how long is this going to be sustainable? I mean, the inevitable dip when it happens again, are they going to get themselves out of it? And I really want to take you back just for a quick example real quick, because you'll see this in every season, every ebb and flow of the season. You go through those dips, you go through those peaks. Right now the Flyers are on a peak. At some point they're going to hit a valley. I can remember back in 07-08, and I reference that season a lot because it's the most representative of what this is. It's a team that had just rebuilt, new players, new core, new coach, somewhat new coach. And then a lot of younger players, you know, and they just kind of, like, nobody believed in them, and they just kind of started going out and they started playing really well. They got off to a really hot start. But around February, March, they dropped 10 in a row. 10 in a row. And they almost fell out of playoffs at that point. And then they got in right around the end and they went on a tear, went to the conference final. I'm not saying this team is going to do that in the conference final, but the thing is that now they're building themselves a little bit of pad. So when they inevitably have that slump at some point, and like the Devils are going through right now, at some point they have a little bit of space to work with here. But the thing is that the way the team plays, they're consistent. They're the only thing that's going to plague them at some point is if they have a slump in scoring because they've had to win tight games.
I would say injuries too. Like if they have any significant injuries, I mean, obviously Noah Cates is the name that comes to mind in terms of skaters that's out significant for an amount of time. He's still mending that broken foot. And then whatever the hell's going on with Carter Hart, obviously dealing with his illness. But Sam Ersson has been I just saw he was voted for the 11th through the 17th of December, the best goalie or the top goalies of the NHL with like a 3-2-0-1 record, .929 save percentage, just absurd stuff, absurd stats. 3 wins, 1 shutout, .195 goal against the average, and .929 save percentage. Yeah, it's crazy. And it begs the question, and you and I were talking about this in the pre-show, who is responsible for this winning culture that we have seen, not just in December, obviously what recency bias of the 9-game point streak and all that is top of mind. But like on a consistent basis, this team is playing significantly better. What we've seen over the last two or three seasons was they started out really hot, or they were winning close games, kind of like what the Eagles are going through right now, where they were winning close games, but they were still racking up points. And then around now into the new year, they dipped off and they never recovered. The wheels fell off and it was all over. I don't see that happening this year, because I think the structure of what is going on comes down to coaching. I truly believe it doesn't matter who you put in net. It's the coaching of how this team, and this is, I think this will go into what you're going to argue, has revamped this team 150%. Like just a totally change of philosophy. But even like it's there's a reason that that John Torello, as we've clearly said and have come around to from my perspective, came in and issued a new culture, a resetting of the culture here in the Philadelphia locker room. And it's worked out tremendously. The question really is how long does it last? Because it's all coaches have a shelf life, but right now, enjoy it. I think this is all because of John Torello, the success that we've seen. They're overachieving in the sense of they're on a frame. They're solidly in the playoffs right now. I saw a stat by Christmas. Teams that are in playoff positions. It didn't specify if they obviously those seedings change and all that. But if you're in a playoff position on December 25th, which we're at the time of this recording 5 days away, you have like an 87% chance of making the playoffs. That is amazing. I don't think we saw that happening for this team in terms of being in second place in the Metropolitan, being right up there with the best, one of the best since their San Jose loss, which we all started freaking out about, which we knew was coming. I know you're shaking your head, but because you didn't freak out, I know. There, I think the record, it's obviously improved now, but the time I saw it, they were like 11-3-2 since that loss, which obviously has now vastly improved, or has it continued to improve. This is all because of Torts. Torts has gotten them to buy into his system, like I talked about with Ristolainen, saying, I wish I had him as a coach at such a young age. And benefits of guys like Tyson Forrester, of Noah Cates when he's back healthy, like these guys are benefiting tremendously from a guy like Torts. And that is why they are doing such success.
And I think the bigger piece, Bill, that to follow up on that, is that like when people talk about like they're still rebuilding, like they're still building up from here. Like there are teams that like progress 1 year and then they take a step back a little bit the next year. Mm-hmm. And we saw that a little bit with the Flyers in 1920 when they tried to go up for it and then they came back the following year and it was COVID and they tried again the year after that. And that's when the wheels really bottomed, really, really fell out of the wagon. But I'll say this, you know, what I really think that's important here is reestablishing the culture. And I know in the past couple of podcasts, I've really emphasized that, but I don't believe people realize how important that is. And it's so undervalued. Is that think about it when you go to work each day. You want to be in a good culture. You want to be around people that you like, around working with. Think about it. If you're in a company with a really bad culture, you're miserable, aren't you? Okay. That's a team like the Arizona Coyotes. Yeah, I mean, they've played well this season. But, like, a great example is the Buffalo Sabres. When you intentionally try to tank for so long, you have a losing culture. And you can't get any better. And you continue losing. There's no reason the Senators should be as bad as they are with all the talent that they have. They just fired their coach. But I can tell you one thing. It's because of their culture. It's because for so long, you know, their owner, Eugene Melnyk, was a very, very cheap man. That was part of the problem. And Ottawa, in Ontario's capital, you know, they one of the cheapest owners there was in the league.
It blows my mind that in professional sports, there are cheap owners, not just in Ontario or in Ottawa. Like, being cheap in sports as a billionaire owner boggles my mind. just it doesn't make sense to me. I can't figure it out.
Oh, it does absolutely to me. No, it's called greed. It's called
that's all it is.
It's greed. It's like, no, like I want more. You don't need it. That's what it is. But to go back to the point, when you have people who are make the tanking point, like they should be tanking, what would you rather have? A team that is on the ascent, that is with a roster that's not devoid of talent, but is developing talent, that's actually having success, or a team that is devoid of talent, trying to build round up talent, that can't win games, a team that when you finally get to a decent point where you feel like you're near playoff contention, you can't do anything. Oh yeah, they're called the Philadelphia 76ers. So if you want your team to be mired where they can't get out of the second round and they can't excel and they can't get any further because they have a losing people who had the tank argument for a long, they're going to make trades. They're going to change things on the roster. They're going to build for the long term. It might deplete some things down the line for the playoffs, and but they're still going to look at the long term, and they're going to look for other guys to step up. That's part of a rebuild. You want that. But the thing is that right now you look at this and say, hey, look, right now you have a locker room that's extremely tight. Watch the videos where they hand the dog mask around. They have the underdog mentality going on. They believe in themselves. This team is not capable right now of winning a Stanley Cup simply because of the talent alone. But the team is also at the same time not going to make a push to say, you know what, we might have a chance because these guys believe in themselves. No, they're going to look at this long term and say, no, you know what, we're still going to do this thing because we want long-term sustained success. We want 2, 3, 4 Stanley Cups, not one gamble at a Stanley Cup.
It's funny. Like, I agree with you. They don't have the talent on the roster today,
not even
on paper, to win a Stanley Cup. But guess what I'm telling you right now, Scott? I'm not going to the Wells Fargo Center and telling them that to their face because they don't want to hear that shit.
Great. They believe that they're professional athletes. They should. They should.
Which is awesome. I'm not going to tell them. I'm not going to tell them that they don't have the talent. I'll just say it here on this podcast.
It's not that I don't believe. Great. No, it's not that I don't believe. That's not the point.
I know what you're saying. Like it's we're just evaluating the team as is, and we're like, there's more to be had, and they know that, and they'll do what they can, and we're going to enjoy what they're doing today without sacrificing tomorrow. Like that's really what this comes down to, and that leads to. And I know we'll get to these trade rumors that have cropped up because of the success. Everyone's talking about flipping this buyer-seller mentality. But first, as always, I want to get to DraftKings Sportsbook, our official sports betting partner of the Orange and Blackjack podcast and the Hockey Podcast Network. Bet the action on the ice with DraftKings Sportsbook. Flyers take on Nashville on Thursday night. You can get them at -1.5. They're favorites against the team. And they have been killing it against the spread. I don't know how closely you've been following this, Scott, but they're one of the best teams to cover the spread. So if you think they're going to win by 2 goals, take them at +180 at this point. So looking good. Download the app now and use promo code THPN. New customers can get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on any hockey game. That's promo code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gambling resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2023, all rights reserved. So obviously what comes with the success of a team that no one expected to be successful on the whole in the Philadelphia Flyers is obviously the inevitable trade rumors. You spoke about it, about how much of a dumpster fire the Ottawa Senators are. Columbus reportedly has said, listen, we are so in the shitter, anyone is available. Now, obviously, they changed that to be like, yeah, you can't take Adam Fantilli or anybody of that like. But hey, if you give us the right offer, we'll give you Johnny Gaudreau. Naturally, this set off the conversation train in Philadelphia. At no point, and I think we're in agreement here, at no point could they make a trade for this without doing exactly what they had been doing for the last 10 years plus and reset and doing the inevitable thing that will cost them years of building, of success, whatever, because there is just too much. One, they're obviously not going to unload these guys in Johnny Gaudreau for free. So they're going to ask for big names. Does that include a Cutter Gauthier? Does that include a Michkov? Does that include a Tyson Forrester? And if it includes any of those guys, I'm immediately hanging up the phone if I'm Danny Briere or Keith Jones. It's not worth it. And then, of course, because Ottawa is such a dumpster fire, the rumors of Claude Giroux being available returned. I know that this podcast, you and I, are big Claude Giroux fans. But now in a way, he is attached to a failed era of Flyers hockey. We can appreciate what he did for this club, but he is still attached to the stigma, especially over the last 2 or 3 years of his tenure here. Why would you bring him back for something like that? He's also, what, 36, 37? He's around the same age? Yeah. I don't see his veteran presence needed. As weird as that sounds, I don't see the benefit of a guy like Claude Giroux. If I had to make a discussion, like if someone held a gun to my head and said, I, whatever reason in this fantasy world, said you have to pick a trade partner for one of them, the obvious answer is Johnny Gaudreau. 30 years old, yeah, but that's still a lot of tenure to get miles out of. So if they had to choose, I don't, and again, they're not choosing any of these guys, especially in December. They're not making moves until the trade deadline. So this is such a crazy thing to think about, that we are so infatuated with the success that we've seen as for the Flyers that they're now discussing Johnny Gaudreau and Claude Giroux coming to Philadelphia.
Listen,
and that boggles my mind.
2 years ago, I would have been all in on Johnny Gaudreau because of where everything was at. You cannot do Johnny Gaudreau at this point. I mean, like, I love the fact that Johnny's a local guy. I love the fact that Johnny would be a great thing to have him in Philadelphia. The problem is I look at Johnny and, you know, wingers are a luxury in this league. He's played 113 games for Columbus. He has 27 goals, 67 assists, 94 points, and he's a minus 49. So for a team that is playing such good team defense and has bought into the defensive structure, that doesn't fit in. I mean, think about it this way. He had 74 points last year and was still minus 33. So, I mean, I know in a lot of it he had like 21 power play points. But still, that's brutal. Even strength was, you know, I'm sorry. Even strength, power goals 3, power play goals, even strength goals 13. So he had 50 even strength points, and he was still a minus 33. I mean, that's bad. That's not great. I mean, and plus minus might be an old stat, but I look at it this way, is that you're paying a player $9.5 million. He scored 6 goals in 33 games, and one of them was an empty netter. And it's like, that's not going to fly. Like, you can't tie up your cap like that. Like, you know, could you theoretically do it? But what value is that going to add? I mean, look at Cam Atkinson. He's been dropped to the fourth line because of, you know, of the way of, you know, he hasn't produced 5-on-5. You know, he's done other things, but he has produced and, you know, and scored a goal and scored a lot of points. So he's slumping. And he's got a pretty decent price tag at the moment. So the thing is, when wingers start to go and they start to lose their wheels a little bit, it kind of goes quickly. I'm not saying that Johnny's there yet at all. He's 30 years old. He's still a younger guy. What I'm saying is that, you know, that's a major red flag to jump from that. you know, went from 115 points to 74. Now he's down to 20th, third of the way through the season. So and right now, if you get through the season, he might get close to around 50 points. So from two seasons ago, that's half his point production is gone. And Columbus is playing $9.5 million with that. So, I mean, there's already rumors in Columbus of Jaromir Kekäläinen and John Davidson getting the boot after this season. So, or even sooner than that. So that's a possibility. The other hand, Claude Giroux, no, like you don't need Claude Giroux anymore. And think of it this way, like, you know, you can appreciate Claude Giroux, like you said, for what he's done in as his tenure as a Flyer. You can also appreciate Eric Lindros for his tenure to Flyer. Both were major failures at the end of the day. And we all know how we've come to love Lindros again. One of these days, we will do the same thing with Giroux. We'll reminisce about how great he was, and it's a shame he never won a cup, and it's a shame that, you know, we wasted his career and stuff like that. It'll be a shame that Lindros never won a cup. We had great years with Leclerc and Remberg and the Legion of Doom and Eric Desjardins and everything like that. But ultimately, those seasons were ultimately failures, and you know what? They did not win the ultimate prize as they wanted to do it. You know, Claude Giroux is a little bit more worse because it's more the mediocre years. And that's the thing is that, you know, you can feed me all you want. Oh, he's the third most points, you know, in the NHL since like 2007 or, you know, right behind Crosby and Patrick Kane and stuff like that. Okay. Well, guess what they have six of and Claude Giroux has zero of. What matters? Stanley Cups. So that's a big deal. And I think that people don't. I think that people need to take into consideration that you moved on from Claude Giroux for a reason. It's time to move on. I love Claude Giroux. We'll always respect what he did. You know, a great hockey player, an elite talent, always has been. But no chance. You don't mess with chemistry. You don't mess with it.
Yeah. He comes back in after he's retired or he signs the one-day contract, retires a Flyer, whatever the case, after 1,000 games played. And then he actually kind of will, I hope, because I do like him as a culture. Like, I think he's a nice person to have around the organization. Give him like something like Eric Lindros. You see Eric Lindros with his family, banging the drum every once in a while at the games and that kind of stuff. That's exactly what are his Gavin and Palmer will hopefully do down the line. Like, that is Claude Giroux's future here as a Philadelphia Flyer. And that's fine. No one should be upset by that. I also think like this is kind of fueled by the lack of a captain for whatever reason. People are like, well, you bring back the old captain and it's like, no, that doesn't mean he comes back and is a captain here for this tenured locker or this locker room. That would not bode well because there's a culture established and Claude Giroux ushers in a new one. So it doesn't make sense to me. I have not forgotten. I know we discussed we were going to bring up this story at the beginning. Do you have any more hockey you want to discuss for this week? Because we have to get to the chaos that ensued at my home over this past weekend. And honestly, I'm chalking it up to the reason why we didn't have an episode this weekend.
On Sunday? Oh, my God. Yeah. It was a nightmare. Now, I'll say this. Well, we do have to have a serious discussion about Carter Hart and Sam Ersson. But we're going to hold that off for next episode.
Ooh, I like that tease. All right. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about.
Oh, we have a tease too. We got a lot going on in January. A
lot of stuff happening here on the Orange Backcheck Podcast. Very exciting stuff. So if you're not subscribed, make sure you're subscribed as always. Listen, I am not a tough person. Yeah.
No listen. Shit. I thought you're Mr. Muscles over there.
Yeah. If you the voice carries a lot more weight than what my actual imagery shows. I don't like bugs. I don't like spiders. I'm still cannot. Ever since I read the birds aren't real theory, you have me kind of convinced birds aren't real. Until this weekend.
I got it.
Scott,
I got it.
Owning a home is the biggest fraud in the United States. Listen, everyone says you got to own a home. You got to own a home. You got to own a home. And then you buy a home and the water heater breaks. The shower starts leaking. Or in my case, a bat gets in your house. Listen, I have been ridiculed. I have been mocked. I imagine we're recording this on Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving so much. Anyway,
December 20th.
Yeah, we're recording this on Christmas week. I'm sure at the Christmas Eve family party, I'm going to get ridiculed and mocked by the father-in-law and brother-in-law for this. But when you go on your nightly rounds to make sure all the doors are locked, all the lights are off, the tree's unplugged, and you walk into your family room right behind this door, if you're watching this clip, and you see a bat fly at you, you would scream too, like I did. I lost my shit. Lost it. Had no idea what to do. Literally, what do you do, Scott, if you have a bat flying in your house? Because I don't know.
Well, I
got it out, by the way. The bat is no longer a resident here at the Cornfield Inn.
Okay. So I actually can tell you what you do because I've had the same thing happen before. I've been waiting to tell you that for 4 days now. I swear to God. Okay. I'll tell you exactly what happened. So I remember vividly, I was sitting on my couch in the living room. Now, this is probably about, I think this is actually during the pandemic.
Oh, even better.
I don't
when
I don't
everyone think I, everyone oh, thought we were getting sick by the air we
oh,
breathe.
Oh God. So I'm sitting there and like, you ever notice something like at the corner of your eye? My peripheral vision's really like sharp. So I'm like, I noticed something. I'm like, what the hell was that? I'm like thinking, no, because I thought I saw something at the corner of my eye. I was like, no, there's not anything. So I'm sitting there. My wife was sitting there too. And next thing you know, I see from the dining. Now we have French doors that separate our dining room and our living room. So I look over and I see this thing swoop in from the dining room. And I was like, what the hell is that? I said, is that a bird? Like, how the hell did the bird get in here? And then finally I see where it went up, and it went up near one of the curtains. And my wife was, what the hell is that? And I go up near and I say, oh my God, that's a bat. Well, my wife freaks out and she starts freaking out. What she does is she goes and she, first thing she does is she grabs the cat. She, of all things, the kids are in bed. So she grabs the cat and she runs upstairs and she closes the door. And we had one cat at the time. She closed the door and I was like, okay. And then I was like, she said, you got to find a way to get it out. And I was like, I don't even know how the hell to get in here. What the hell am I going to do with a bat getting in here? So if you don't know this, and I didn't know this at the time until after the incident, bats don't fly in a straight line.
No, they don't.
They don't. They don't fly in a straight. They fly in like a U pattern. They fly down and then they fly up. So I'm sitting there and I open up the front door to my house and I'm trying to get this bat out of here. I'm like trying to wave it out somehow. I've closed my French door. So, okay. And I'm trying to make sure it doesn't go back upstairs in the hallway area and stuff. I'm thinking, how am I going to get this thing out? So finally I'm like, okay, you know what? Let me grab this little, I had this little, actually I had a,
please tell me you put on your goalie equipment.
No, I got this guy right here. So
okay,
this is stick. A little go mini goalie stick. So I think, okay, let me try to, like, you know, I didn't have a fly swatter. Let me try to like push this thing outside. So I'm literally doing like this.
By the way, before you continue, fun fact, because I had to be, someone was telling me, oh, just kill it. Illegal to kill a bat in Pennsylvania. So I don't know what it's like in New Jersey. I'm sure it's very similar. Apparently it's illegal. So thank God I didn't kill that thing.
Well, I should probably stop this story. So anyway, anywho, luckily I don't live in Pennsylvania. Yeah. Now I just basically ruined the story for you. But anyway, it was a well-timed, well-placed joke. So anyway, what happened was it flew over and it got above my fireplace where our TV is at. So I stand up and I walk towards the TV area. And this thing comes straight down and it starts flying right at my head. And listen, I'm a goalie. I just react, man. When something comes at me in my head, I just react. There was no intention. I promise if anybody from the SPCA is listening, it was not intentional. I literally just took this stick here and I was like, oh shit. And I just kind of swung and it just went and it plopped on the ground. So I was like, oh my God. And I was like, I'm looking down at it. And you know, I did the whole, like, when you're like, when you're immature and you like poke it to see if it's alive or anything. And so I poke it and it's not moving. Like, okay, maybe I stunned it. And so finally I just take it literally and just had wrist it right out the door. Like no joke. I just flicked it right out the door. Wrist shot style. So anyway, I do that. Call my wife downstairs. And I was like, okay, I think we're good, hon. And she goes, what happened? I'm like, it was coming at me. I just swung. I think I just felt clunk and that was it. And she's like, how do you know it didn't fly back in or anything? I said, well, let me show you. So I opened up the front door and there it is laying on the step. So she's like, okay. I said, well, look, hopefully I just stunned the damn thing and hopefully it'll wake up and be tomorrow and be gone tomorrow. So we woke up the next day and go out there and I look on the front porch and the son of a bitch is laying there, you know, like just,
oh boy.
So yeah, I hit it pretty damn good. And the bad thing about it was got yelled at for like 2 days in a row. She's like, why are you gonna take the damn thing off the porch? I'm like, I ain't touching that thing. Like some animal will come eat it or something like that. So finally I had to do the old, you know, the old I would say the farmer's burial where you grab a shovel and then throw it somewhere in the yard and, you know, an animal comes and picks it up later on. So, I've had a bat come in my house. Don't know where it came from. Don't know how it got in. I killed it.
Yeah, I don't know how this thing got in my house.
I have no idea. Yeah. But apparently they can fit through really small holes. I don't know if it got through a vent or something along those lines. But I'll just never forget, like, what the hell was that? And I'm telling you, Bill, it was coming right in my head. I would have been like you. Like, I would have screamed probably if I saw it. I'm like, and boom. I felt the clunk and wrist shotted it right out the door. I didn't know what else to do. I mean, I'll tell you, and I had one time, the first time, that wasn't the first time I ever had a bat in this house since I lived here. I swear to God. Remember those CFL bulbs they used to have, the twisty ones that look like they're the spiral bulbs? I had just moved back here from Philly. And I had been living here probably about 6 months. And I had a $10 lamp from Walmart, one of those ones with a little reader on the side and the tall lamp at the top. And I rather forget this, too. And I had it for, like, the longest time. And I turn it on one night, and the light is, like, flickering. And I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm like, why is it flickering? Like, this, you know, like, I never seen a CFL bulb go out before. I'm like, flickering, so... I go and I'm looking at it and I see a flicker and I saw like something flap out of it. I'm like, what the frig is that? I look in here. A bat had gotten stuck inside the CFL bulb. So I ain't touching that thing. Hell no. I mean, I am afraid of animals and stuff like that, but like I've been testing rabies or whatever friggin' diseases that listen, bats carry Marburg, Ebola, all that shit. I ain't touching a bat. All right. Yeah, exactly. I literally took a whole trash bag, unplugged the lamp, put the trash bag over the lamp, threw the whole lamp out.
That's amazing.
I swear to God, dude.
Good stuff.
Uh-huh. So yeah, I've had bad incidents. So I've killed one and I threw another in the trash. So yeah.
Luckily, I got this one out. It was a lot of the mother-in-law came over to help at 12:30 at night.
Oh.
It was chaos. It was chaos here. But we finally got it out. It like hid in our. At first, we were like, "Is it possible it was in the Christmas tree?" Because we get a real tree. Is it possible it was real in the Christmas tree the whole time? But it's like there's no way because I had to take that thing off the car, lug it into the house, stand it up. Like there was no way it would have flown.
Right.
It would have flown away by then. It was just pure chaos. As far as we know, it's still alive. Have not seen it in the backyard laying down. We got it out and it was fine. Did not bite the dog. Dog was going chaotic in the family room.
I believe it. I believe it.
As you know, you might have even heard him on earlier in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
He was barking. So always fun. Homeownership. That'll be our final segments in the offseason too, how we go through the chaos of owning homes. Thank you so much for listening. This has been episode 165 of Orange and Backcheck. What do you think? Is this here to stay? Is the success that we're seeing in the month of December going to be on a consistent basis for the rest of the season? We're almost halfway through, if you can believe it. It's crazy how fast this season goes. But hey, if you're like me and you took the over on 75.5 points, you're feeling good on DraftKings Sportsbook. Make sure you sign up, promo code THPN. Make sure you follow us anywhere and everywhere on social media, Orange and Backcheck Podcast, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all that fun stuff. And until next time, have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. I think we're doing an episode before the new year. We'll if you see it in your feed, great. If not, we'll see you in the new year. Have a great one, folks, and we'll see you next time.